my name is Francis.
I'm Alice.
And welcome to this week's episode of Two Friends in a Pod, a place for friends to catch up on all things movies, TV, music, and pop culture.
This week we're doing Turning Red, the new Disney film, Disney Pixar film, sorry, that just came out on Disney Plus. It went straight to the streaming service, didn't it?
Yes, yeah. Sadly.
Yeah. And also we'll tell you about our experiences of Permission to Dance Soul, the concert version. But wait for that reaction after this.
A bit of sizzle.
You might not be shocked at what we might say about that particular experience.
As well. Might as well set up a bingo card and like cross off everything we say. Everything predictable.
So because we'll forget words such as cute,
I don't know, so cool,
talented, cool,
stage presence, hot,
yeah. All those kinds of things.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll be saying them later. Yeah, Turning Red, the new Disney Pixar film directed by Domi Shi. So she directed that short film that everybody loved and cried at, which is Bao, which is shown in the beginning of Incredibles 2, I think, in cinemas. But also she worked previously as a storyboard artist for like Inside Out, Incredibles 2, Toy Story 4. Like she's got a pretty good resume. Yeah. She knows her Pixar films and she's very good at it. What is the general plot line of this story? I think like we've probably discussed this before, but just like recap, do you want to go through what this story is mostly about?
I shall, Alice. It's my honor. It definitely was on our list of movies that we're really keen for in one of the episodes that we did earlier. But essentially, this covers the story of Mei Mei, who is a 13-year-old teenage girl growing up in Toronto. She's also Chinese-Canadian, which is important to identity. And, you know, as she's blooming and becoming a woman and finding her identity, she finds out that in her family, the women are, quotation marks, cursed to turn into a panda whenever they get too emotional. And it's about her adventure to figure out what the hell is happening to her and maybe get rid of the panda or maybe not.
We'll see what happens in the end. When we get first introduced to Mei Mei, she is an absolute like rocket of energy. Like she's straight up like, hi, I'm Mei Mei.
And I've got things under control.
Yeah, like I have all these expectations, but don't worry, I like doing those things. And I don't know, she just seems like likable and like your typical like teen girl just being like, I like to hang out with my friends, I like to, you know, do all these sorts of things. I really liked her from the beginning. I'm like, yeah, like she seems so fun. And then she has like her pool of friends as well that are like support her, I guess. So there's, I think, Priya, Miriam, their names,
it's a Korean girl's name.
Abby. So there's Abby, Miriam, and Priya. So her three friends.
Yeah.
How did you feel about Mei Mei when you were first introduced to her? Did you get like the same vibes? Like she's just like a cute like teen girl who's like kind of spunky.
That's a perfect word I would use. That's the word I had in my head is spunky. She has a lot of attitude. She has a lot of confidence. Mm-hmm. But I think above all that, like, I don't know, I really saw our soul. I feel like you could see yourself reflected in it. So I think particularly for this movie, the fact that it is a teenager growing up in the early 2000s as an Asian in like in Canada, for us it's Australia. But I think all those ideas of honoring your family, being like that first gen like migrant family, having to kind of live up to your parents' standards and make sure that their sacrifice, you know, moving to this country and everything they did to, you know, settle in wasn't in vain. And, you know, Mei Mei, she's really good at math. She plays instruments. She's high achieving. She helps out her parents and cleans and all that stuff. I think you definitely see a part of yourselves reflected in that. So I really loved her.
I think it's important too that she actually like self-admits that she enjoys doing those things for her parents. Like she understands the role that she plays in their lives, which is, you know, honoring their sacrifice, as you said, and being their treasured daughter, which I think is such a like thing to hold over like a 13-year-old girl. The fact that she like gets it, I'm like, it's a lot, right? But I can totally understand. Like I think for me in particular, when I saw her, there are definitely parts that I could see like reflected, but I think like I didn't, like, me personally, my experience isn't the exact same as hers. Mm-hmm. So, like, you know, when she would just, like, accept her parents, like, telling her what to do, I'm like, oh, that wasn't me. I was just a bad child. But definitely the ideas of, like, you know, the sacrifice and, like, we do so much for you. Like, the least you could do is get an A on your maths test. Definitely that experience is definitely relatable.
Well, I think the movie starts and she talks about the most important thing is to honor your family because your parents are the ones who gave you your precious life, which I think is such a Asian mentality and concept as well. So, you know, in my family, I gave birth to you, your body. It's like this, it's like a way where they own your body. It's like a gift from them. So I know my parents have very old-fashioned ideas about even tattoos and piercings. It's like to do that is to disfigure, in a way, the body that your parents gave you, your healthy body, you know, and you're not treasuring it. So I just immediately was like, I recognize these ideas. I see this very clearly.
Even like dyeing hair. It's like, why would you ruin your beautiful hair? Your beautiful dark hair.
Totally.
Yeah, I think the difference for like maybe me and maybe for you as well is that we like acknowledge those traditions and stuff, but we're just kind of like, but we want to do what we want to do as well. Like having grown up in like a more westernized society, like, we're kind of like, we accept that you that you feel that way, but we may not necessarily feel the same way. And so I think for us, our version of it is like my body, like, is what I choose.
Really her job.
But I mean I'm here for the Sandra Oh revival. I really am.
More Sandra Oh everywhere, please.
Are you gonna watch Oma though?
I'm too scared. I'll watch it with you as long as I'm allowed to close my eyes. So Sandra Oh is in a horror movie. We will be starring in a horror movie and Alice shared it with me and it looks terrifying.
Well, I'll tell you what, I shared it to you on like, I remember clearly it was like a Sunday morning and I was just like scrolling through like my feed and I saw this trailer. I was like, holy moly, that looks so scary. And I sent it to you and guys, I got seen. Like she did not reply to that message.
And then later on when we had dinner, we met up for dinner and I was like, I didn't watch it. I admit it. I scrolled straight past.
I definitely.
My body said fight or flight, and I flew away. I just like
happen often, but yes, for something that looked genuinely scary, she said no. This is the line I draw.
But going back to Turning Red, I think I definitely see what you say. Where you know, Mei Mei is very happy to do all the things that her parents ask her to, but I think maybe the crux of this movie is her realizing actually, I have another side to myself and another part of my identity. And maybe that is at odds with what my parents want me to be. So it's very much her learning to accept that and go into that and maybe just assert herself a bit more and be able to stand up for herself and who she is. So I thought that was really nice because I think there's this sort of universal appeal to growing up and learning about who you are. Because for Mei Mei, she loves boy bands. She loves writing, drawing fan fiction. She loves drawing cute boys. She loves dancing. She loves all this sort of stuff. So there's this part of her which is like, but my mom doesn't like this. Mm. So does she not like me? Like, is this a part of me that my mom doesn't approve of or love? So I think there's that whole conflict, which I felt was really meaningful.
Yeah, so we get scenes where she has to hide and pretend that she doesn't know who Four Town is.
The boy band.
So there's a boy band in the film called Four Town. I think the name inspiration comes from like bands like O-Town, which was like very prominent in the 2000s, 90s. But the experience of like enjoying the boy band, like from like Mei's point of view, I've read that it's been inspired by like Big Bang and 2PM and how the director felt about those bands at that period of time. I guess like what we see in this movie is just like a lot of joy being put into like this animation. So like all these experiences and everything, you can feel like Mei's being created with like a lot of love, I think.
Yes, definitely.
Everything that she does, like all the little like scenes that we get of what you were saying, that she like was like writing fan fiction, like drawing these quote unquote sexy images.
It's like a boy as a mermaid with abs and then kissing.
I freaking love this scene. So she like starts drawing and she starts like, fantasizing about a boy, right? And she's like drawing these like like sexy images of, you know, half naked boys with chests and like kissing scenes and stuff. And then she like does it like under a bed, and then she just realizes like, you know, she kind of like snaps out of a trance and she's like, oh my God, what have I done? It's like so shameful. I thought that was like the funniest and like the purest scene, I think. Because like captures in a very funny way exactly that period of time in your life where you're like an adolescent and you're like, wow, suddenly these boys are really attractive.
Like, yes, it's definitely her like being like, what is attraction, like what is desire, like she's figuring that stuff out. It's so awkward and it's weird and it's shameful, and it really perfectly captures that. Because, and I've actually seen a lot of pushback to this film saying that scene in particular is too adult and too mature and unrealistic, which I say, if you're saying that, you probably aren't familiar with 13-year-old girls or like that experience, because I guarantee you that's an experience they go through. But, you know, I knew friends who were reading fan fiction, writing fan fiction, like this definitely is a thing.
Just because they're not telling you about it doesn't mean it doesn't happen, right?
Exactly. And if they're not telling you, it's because you make it out to be such a horrible thing, right?
Yeah.
Because like I think for Mei Mei, the reason she keeps it a secret is because her mom is so dismissive of Fort Town. Like whenever the ads appear on TV, like she's like, oh, why are they gyrating? Like, oh, why are they moving their hips like that? So Mei Mei has to pretend like, yeah, like I don't like them. I love I love my classical music.
Yeah, she also almost has to like suppress those desires because they're seen as something wrong, which you know it's not. It's like it's perfectly normal for her to feel that way. And then her mom goes out to then, like, I guess, defend her in a way. Like she goes and drives out to the convenience store where the boy that she was fantasizing about and show these images and kind of put the blame on him, which I also think is a very like, I guess, Asian experience as well. Like it's never like your fault, even though it's like probably is. It's always like the blame on like other people. I definitely experienced that when I was growing up. It's like it's not that you I don't trust you, it's that I don't trust everyone else. And it's like, what?
It's also like, yeah, I don't trust other people. But it's always like, it couldn't be my perfect daughter. You're just being influenced by other bad people. So you got to make the right friends. And I think, yeah, that scene in particular was so embarrassing because poor Mei Mei is having her pictures like shared with random strangers, plus also the boy, and everyone's thinking that she's a freak and her mom is like yelling in the store.
Yeah.
I really felt for her. Like she just looked she wanted the ground to swallow her up.
I was embarrassed for her. I was like, this is actually so horrible. I would not be able to face anybody in the next day. Like, I would genuinely be like, horrified. Like,
I got to move towns. I got to change my face, my identity, my name. Like, I cannot be seen again.
I'm sick. I'm going to be sick for a long time.
And also, like, her mom is always suspicious of one of her friends, Miriam. So she's always saying, oh, I bet it's that troublemaker Miriam. Mm. Or it's probably Miriam's influence, which I feel like I've heard that so many times growing up.
It's like looking for someone to blame, right?
Yeah.
Because it can't be Mei Mei because Mei Mei is so good. So it's like maybe having to struggle with that, meeting that expectation from her mother, but also like appeasing herself, which is, you know, she likes Fort Town. And by the way, Fort Town, the band itself, I completely stan them.
They have 5 members, but they're called Fort Town.
It's pretty funny because like the setup when they introduce Fort Town, I think it's a scene with the friends. Can't remember the first guy, but then there's Taeyong who saves doves, I think.
Yes.
And Robert, he speaks French. And then the other two, they're just there, which I think is
just really talented as well.
Yeah. Like, I feel like that's so representative of, like, how you would talk about a band, I think.
Yes, definitely.
Like, got your favorites and then you've got, like, oh, everyone else is good, but it's just, like, they're definitely, you've got your favorites, your biases, you might even say.
Yeah, and just the way that each boy band member has like their story and what they're good at, like it was definitely came from a place of love and from someone who is familiar with boy bands.
One who grew up a fangirl.
Definitely got this, read this movie.
I think so. It was nice to see like those personal like touches. I think it makes like Mimi's character feel more real as well. Like you know, there are things that a teenage girl wouldn't do necessarily, so that part I really enjoyed.
Yeah, I guess another thing that I really enjoyed was her relationship with her mom, which I guess we've touched on. It can be quite fraught. And I think this movie captures that sort of universal experience of growing up and realizing that maybe your parents are also flawed. Because I think you go through this experience where they're the ones who raise you and like guide you. And then you realize, oh, actually, maybe they're wrong about certain things. So her mom is wrong about Miriam. She judges her too quickly. Well, like, yeah, she can be quite judgmental in a negative way. Her mom is dismissive of like Mei Mei's hobbies and like, you know, her hobbies outside of what her mom expects. So it's like Mei Mei slowly realizing that I am myself and maybe mom can be wrong too. And it's okay to challenge that, which is, I think, a very scary experience for every person going on.
I think to come back to like the what you said in the beginning about this being an Asian Canadian story or a westernized Asian story, is that realization where you realize like, you know, I think the mom figure in Asian culture is very much like authority, like you just don't question it. Whereas like I think being brought up here, you kind of like you question everything, like you're taught to question things. So it's like that mom figure like becomes like almost like a friend, like that sort of dynamic. I think that that's what she's kind of discovering as well. Like your mom is a person too, just something that we don't like, which the mom herself didn't want to present herself as because she's like, no, I have to be like this, you know, mother figure, getting my daughter to be the best person she can be. And that's all I am as well. So she was kind of like boxing herself in as well. So yeah, an interesting dynamic. Yeah. And you can see like, the mom was definitely the dominant figure in the household as well.
The dad was like the quiet, just to the sidelines dad. And there are multiple scenes where, like, for instance, Mei Mei goes to her mom and she's like, can I please go to the Four Town concert? She makes a whole presentation and sets out her reasons why she should be allowed to go. And her mom's just like, nope. And your dad agrees with me. And the dad didn't even get a chance to say anything. And he's clearly like a bit more lenient.
Yeah. He's just kind of like, oh, it's probably fine.
Just like, no. And I guess on that note as well, it being like that Asian experience, so much of the movie is rooted in Mei Mei and her family's Asianness. Like not only the fact that they run a temple, but I think even the way it's shot when the dad is cooking. So that was one of my favorite scenes because it's shot so beautifully. It's like these super like slow motion macro shots of the lettuce being cut, of the pork belly like sizzling in the pan. And it's just this love letter to Asian cuisine. And it reminded me of something you said recently because we're eating mala tang and like you took your first bite and you were just like, man, every time I eat this, I just think Asian food is the best. Like you were just so like, this is it. Like this hits different. Like nothing compares. And I think that whole sequence was just like, yeah, like this love letter to food, which is so important to Asian culture. And then also the dad, like his glasses glinted in that anime way when he was cooking.
I think that scene also reminded me of Food Wars, if you've ever seen any of those scenes. Like, it's just, like, food porn. There's no other way to say it. But, like, you know, the pork was glistening, the lettuce was shining. Like, it just looks absolutely delicious. Like, you wanted to eat it off the screen because you know what that represents. And I guess it's, like, food is important to Asian culture, as you said. And I think that's what the dad's role, I guess, in that family is. He provides the food on the table, I guess, literally. Speaking of anime, there are also a lot of anime references. Yes,
100%. Just in the visual language, it's extremely influenced by anime.
Yeah, so anytime the girls were, I guess, looking at Four Town or, you know, something exciting happens, they have, like, literal, like, heart eyes with the big, you know, like, you've got the classic Pixar animation and then it suddenly kind of divulges into, like, that anime sort of style with, like, yeah, like, the sparkly eyes and the love hearts and just, like, I don't know how to
get the really cute
you see, like, hands to cheeks and, like, yeah, very anime, like, cutesy
cheeks.
Yeah. I absolutely loved, and again is a reference to like Domi Shin's like experience with anime, like Sailor Moon and things like that, like cartoons that aim towards girls that they would have watched when they were growing up. Again, this is like the 2000s, I guess, so like Sailor Moon said, you know, all those kind of animes, like they're really popular at this point in time.
Yeah, and there are other bits and pieces. So later on in the film, when some of the aunties transform into pandas as well, that very much mimics Sailor Moon's transformation scene. There's scenes of like Mei Mei as a panda, like soaring through the Toronto sky. And that very much also mimics like Sailor Moon and all those like anime. So definitely like a very nostalgic and familiar and comforting movie in that sense as well.
It's imagery that you're familiar with, but make it red panda. Oh my gosh, speaking of when the aunts assemble and then turn into red pandas, I was like, this is literally like the Avengers of Canada. Like, all the pandas just assembled to help, help the greater cause.
Oh, and actually another reference. So later on in the film, there's like a big showdown. Mei Mei's like, I want to go to the concert. And for her as well, she doesn't want to get rid of the red panda spirit within her. She's happy. She accepts it as a part of her. And that obviously causes a little conflict with her mom, who tries to stop her. And at the end, because something happens, her own panda spirit comes out. So before this, the dad was like, yeah, your mom's panda is like really big. But then he actually see it and it's like the size of Godzilla. And so her shots as well very much mimic like Godzilla walking through the city, like this huge panda with like red eyes.
And it's quite funny to see as well, because if you've seen a red panda in real life, they're really, really cute. They're very cute, but very small. So to see, like, I'm just imagining, like, a huge version of it just, like, stomping through a city. It's just, like, that's a really weird thing to see. I think I would, like, if that happened to me, I would just be, like, in shock. I wouldn't be able to, like, fathom this, like, cute fairy thing just, like, ruining everything. But, yeah, it is worth noting that her panda spirit is so much bigger than everyone else's, like, including the grandmas as well.
It just doesn't compare. It's so big.
I wonder if that's like a reflection of like her emotion as well. Like there was a lot of pent up emotion from her particularly. So I wonder if that's just like the bigger the panda, bigger the outlet.
The more oppressed. I think, on the subject of the panda, like that's very much sort of like a metaphor for puberty and growing up and starting to feel like these emotions and feelings. And like I've watched the director talking about it. It's also like, you know, body hair, you like your body changes physically and it's like mimicking all that, like representing all that. So yeah, how did you feel about the red panda transformation?
I thought the way that we're introduced to the red panda is like a pretty comedic scene, but I think it's very telling when her mom mistakes it for her like getting her period.
Yes.
And like offering her like pads and everything, and then she's also like suppressing her anger as well, and like that's very much like, you know, that puberty, that sign of change, like I suddenly got all these emotions and I can't contain them anymore, they must be let out. So we get this whole comedy scene of the parent, of the mom thinking it's her like change into womanhood, and I guess it kind of is, like in a way, like it's not necessarily a period, but it's definitely like a change in your body, change in how you feel about things, and then progressing into that like next stage of your life. So I think throughout the whole movie as well, there's a lot of reference about going to the Four Town concert and how that's the marker of their womanhood. And I think that's just a very like teenage mindset to be like, this is the defining moment in our lives, this like boy band concert. But it's like, no, actually that happened to you when you like, you know, turned into a panda.
It's such a teen thing as well, because later on in the movie, Mei Mei finds out that she might not be able to go to the Four Town concert. And the way she behaves, like, this is the end of the world. Like, nothing will compare. This is the worst thing ever to happen to anyone in the universe, which is so teenage. Like, of course, when you're that age and you've been looking forward to it, not being able to go to a boy band concert, you don't have perspective. Like, all you have are these raging emotions and hormones. And she's so upset. I was like, definitely, like, I would be too.
Oh my goodness, I would definitely be that person to be like, this is the worst thing that ever happened to me in my whole life. My 13 years of life.
Why am I being punished? What did I do wrong?
I've done everything you wanted me to do. Like, she raised the money. Like, she did go through a lot of effort. Mm. I think the other thing is the friendship with her, like, with her friends, how that becomes, like, her solace almost. Mm-hmm. I think that that's pretty important to note as well, that she feels like a calm when she's with her friends, because I think they really accept her for who she is. Even when she turns to a panda, like obviously they're shocked, but they're kind of like, hey, that's kind of cool. Like it's
like,
you know,
Abby's like, that's so cute and she loves it.
Yeah, exactly. So it's about like having that like friendship group and like how that can be something that centers you when you are going through a transitional period, and how that can, yeah, like how that can ground you in that pivotal moments. People who know exactly how you feel, because they all really love Four Town too. So they're like, you know, when they think they can't go, they're all in it together. Do you know what I mean?
Crying.
Like, oh my God. Yeah, exactly. Like, but we're going through this together. So it's like a shared experience that I think is something that you can only have with people who are going through that with you. Yes. So I think that was really nice to see.
Yeah, I think that was really important, because Mei Mei literally imagines her friends when she's feeling stressed and about to turn into a panda. And you can see in her mind, they're saying stuff like, it's okay, we love you, you tried your best, we love you, panda or not, which is something she's not getting from her parents at that stage, because her mom's very much like, oh, we have to get rid of the panda, like it's a bad thing. So there's definitely like that whole idea of having a group of people aside from your family who might understand you on a different level, and finding connections that might be deeper in some level, which her mom kind of can't imagine, because when Mei Mei is like, I just think of the people who I really love, she instantly is like, oh, she thinks of me, whereas like, you're probably the person stressing her out the most right now.
Yeah, but she doesn't like realize that, I guess. She's not like completely aware, but yes, it's like having that dynamic as well was important to the movie, and also important to Mei Mei and how she like was able to deal with like all the things that life was really throwing at her at that point in time. Like, we're in this together. Like, I thought that was so cute.
And I thought it was really meaningful as well that Mei Mei ultimately decides to keep the panda. Mm-hmm. I think that speaks to that sort of like generational difference as well, particularly in like migrant background families, where something that's not accepted previously. So, you know, her mom and her grandma and generations before have all gotten rid of that panda spirit and decided to be fully human. But Mei Mei is now at that stage and maybe that age in society where it's okay to be something different, right? Like, I, you know, you can apply that metaphor to so many different things and so many different identities. But what was once not okay is like okay now, and she can be a panda human, and that's fine. People will love her no matter what, which I thought was really sweet.
Yeah, I guess it's so when she becomes a panda, it's like immediately it's fine, we'll get rid of it. Like, there's that expectation, even though she has like a pseudo choice, I guess, it's not really, because it's like expected that she will just accept their way. Just as the mothers before them have also just accepted it and not questioned how things should be done, Mei should also like follow that path as well. And then when she doesn't, they're kind of like, what?
Like why wouldn't you want to get rid of it?
Yeah, exactly.
Why would you want to keep it? Yeah.
Yeah, like it's
like that assumption.
Yeah, that assumption that she doesn't want it, where she's actually fine with doing it. And people around her accept it as well. Like, things have changed, times have changed. They're in a different society now. People already accept it. Like, everybody's already shown their love for the red panda. Like, they want her to perform at like birthday parties. They want her to come to things. Her friends are like, it's so cute. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
No problem.
To accept it and like accepts it as part of herself as well.
Yeah. Embrace it, which I thought was very nice. I loved it.
Embrace the red panda life.
I love it. Yeah. I mean, I think you can tell pretty much that we love this movie. I thought it was so heartfelt, so emotional. I know for us, like, we have that level of relating to that female characterization, but also that Asian, like, migrant background. But I think just for all kids, this is such a sweet movie. I think Pixar has just done a home run again. They just know what they're doing. They don't miss.
There's a lot to love about this movie. If you watch the making of Red Panda, you'll get to see you'll see more insights into Domi Shi and the rest of the team as well, which I think was quite nice. It's a very Disney commentary, if I'm being honest, but it does give a little bit insight into how like the movie was made, and you'll see that a lot of personality was put into this movie. I think it's very clear from the little like personalization of Mei and how that reflects the director's life as well, and her personal interest when she was like a younger child. I thought that was really nice to see, and made the movie feel like quite authentic, I think. Not sure why this one didn't make it straight to movies. I'm not entirely sure what the reasoning for that is, but I mean, I guess it makes it just more easily accessible for the rest of us to watch it on Disney Plus.
It's also very much a love letter to Toronto. So I just want to say I recognize so much. Like, there was the streetcars, there was the loonies and toonies. She wears a toque. You can see CN Tower.
Tim Hortons, I think.
Yeah, they had Timbits on the breakfast table.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're probably on Spadina and Dundas, which is where Chinatown is.
Oh, God, she's been to Toronto. I get it.
Just a little humble brag.
Yeah, whatever. I get it. I haven't been, so I wouldn't know. It just looked like a normal town.
Well, the animation itself was like really pretty though, overall. Mm. It was super colorful and beautiful.
When do they miss with the animation? Anything you expect like a pretty film, if anything. Yeah, not bad.
Which is Australian for it was good.
Yeah. This also follows the more recent Disney / even Pixar offerings that we've seen in the past, like Encanto and Luca, where there's no real antagonist or villain. Like the villain is the change that comes with growing up and the conflict between people and the people you love. So definitely interesting to see like those more human stories coming out.
Yeah, I'm very much reminded of like Inside Out, which, you know, the villain was sadness.
Exactly.
That very conceptual idea of like a movie. I think it's a really interesting change in like the traditional like children's film as well. Mm. And I love that they're getting like a bit more experimental. I think this one in particular is pretty successful at what they're trying to achieve as well. So that's a plus for them.
And I actually, so this movie made some waves on Twitter after a review was released by a certain person from a certain outlet. Mm-hmm. And this review ultimately got removed and is no longer accessible, but I have a version.
Twitter is forever.
Yeah, the internet is forever. You don't lose anything. But the crux of this review was that this film is extremely unrelatable. That it seemed made only for Domi Shi's close family and friends to relate to, and that the movie was exhausting. I mean, you can imagine the demographic of the person that wrote this. You're probably right. So I feel like, I mean, I think it's good that we're telling more stories like this. I think it's not just relatable. Obviously, like I said before, like on some levels, it's extra relatable when you are Asian, you are an Asian girl who grew up in that era. But I think, you know, the ultimate story is quite universal. It's about growing up. Yeah. We all do that. The struggles with our parents and finding your own identity. So, I mean, just because it's not the default white boy or girl that we tend to see in movies, that's changing now. It doesn't mean it's not relatable or universal. And I'm sure many, many kids of many backgrounds will like find themselves in this movie. And I think it's like good to like see different identities and different stories of growing up because that's how you build empathy for experiences that aren't your own.
Yeah,
of course. I just want to say that on my platform to Sean.
Sean, the 60-year-old man or something.
So suck it, Sean. That's why you had to release an embarrassing apology on Twitter and take down your review.
My Lord, the audacity of people to see experiences other than their own. Because as you said, very perfectly, it's a movie. The crux of it, it's a coming of age story about a girl coming into adolescence, puberty, going through all the hormones and everything, and having that experience in like relation to the mother and also the friends and everything. And she just so happens to also be Chinese growing up in a Canadian, like in Canada, sorry, not Canadian country. What the hell? Like Chinese growing up in Canada and having those, that extra layer of the cultural differences. It's kind of like, why can't we have that story? Like that is literally so many people's experiences. Like, hello.
Exactly. And we've grown up watching experiences unlike our own through stories, through movies and TV. And we would still relate to them, of course. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because we manage. So you guys can manage too.
At the end of it, we're all human. We're all living here trying to get by, and we all come from different backgrounds. Like, is that it's not a revelation, that's just simply fact.
It's fact, Sean. So yeah, I hope you're listening.
So suck it. Sorry that you didn't have a hard life.
Actually, I have one last question for you related to this. Who would be your four-town bias?
Obviously Taeyong, who's Taeyong? A favorite of me. There's no competition. Also because we don't really get like introduced to the other two people. And I think I would be torn between Taeyong and Robert, because I think Taeyong, I'm totally projecting, but I feel like Taeyong is like very much like the cute boy who like, you know, like saves animals,
they're more like cutesy vibes, like "Hi, I'm Taeyong, peace sign." Whereas Robert, I think I would also really enjoy because I think he's more like the suave, charismatic character. And I'm also into that, so I don't know. I'll be very torn. I think Taeyong would be my favorite. Yeah, but then Robert would be my bias, Rebecca. How about that?
So funny as well, because Maymay has a Tamagotchi that she's called Robert Jr. And then she's like, "You'll meet your dad soon."
Oh my god, that part of her, the fangirl of it. As a fellow fangirl, all my life, I totally related to that bit.
I felt so represented.
At all stages of my life, my musical choices have changed, clothing has changed, but what I've always been is a fangirl.
As well, and the movie is just so loving towards that part of girl's identity. It's not mocking, it's not silly, and it acknowledges that it can be funny and weird, but, we're all fangirls.
I think just like the fact that, like, if you had to, for example, explain like BTS to someone, you'd be like, "Oh, this is Jimin and he's an interpretive dancer." Like, it's just like ridiculous. Like, it's a ridiculous statement to make, but it makes so much sense to you, and it makes so much sense to fellow fans as well. Like, it's like not questionable at all. Whereas like, yeah, sometimes when you say things out loud, you're like, "Oh, that's actually like out of context, like a strange thing to say." But like when you're in it, when you love something, it like doesn't like occur to you that it could be seen as odd, I guess. Mm-hmm. And I think that like, this serves as a total love letter to everything that I guess Domi Shin, but also like, Domi Shi. I'm calling her Domi Shin. It's Domi Shi. But also like other people who enjoy the same things, like what their experiences are.
Mm.
So again, Sean, sorry you weren't a fanboy.
Probably was like, just whatever. Like a Batman fanboy, whatever.
Yeah, but it's like there are like literally millions of girls who are, so like
chill out.
Chill. Maybe this movie isn't for you, but it's for someone, okay?
Yeah. I would 100% recommend it to everyone.
Yeah, it was just a fun movie. I think just very enjoyable, if I'm honest. Hot take, it was good.
It was good. You know that part where she does a ritual where she's supposed to get rid of the panda spirit, and she's in the spirit realm, and that lady like comes down of the sky. It looked like Shen Yun.
Because it's like all floaty and like she was wearing the traditional clothes and stuff.
Yeah. Oh, Lordy. Give me mad Shen Yun vibes. Because there's ads to everywhere.
Yeah, the image is clear in my mind.
Yeah.
I've never seen a show, but yeah. And it's clear what that looks like.
Was there any other standout moments?
I think of, but I was humming that boy band song, like that was playing in the credits.
Yeah. Billie Eilish and her brother did the music.
Honestly, it was pretty good. I was humming it for a bit. I've forgotten how it goes, but it was definitely stuck in my head. Like it was a solid pop song. Mm. And if you stuck around into the end of the credits, you'll see the dad do, like, he's like listening to that song.
Mm. Yeah.
Then he's like, you know, enjoying himself, which I thought was really cute.
Also, yeah, the mom is like marveling at Maymay's grades and she's like, "My little scholar today, UN Secretary General tomorrow." And I was like, God.
What an expectation like, to have of your child.
Yeah.
But she's 13. It's fine. Sure.
Yeah, relax. She's just trying to go to school.
Yeah.
When her mom runs to the school and being like, "Maymay, you've got your pads."
I would die.
I would literally die.
Oh my goodness. Her mom has like no shame, which I love.
Yep.
Also, yeah. I'd be so embarrassed.
No boundaries, no shame. Just like running into school, whatever.
Yeah. Yes, 100%. And yeah, the whole like concert scene, I think as well, that was like pure joy, I think, to watch that. Because I think I'm just thinking of like our experiences and I'm like, yeah, that would be us being like, oh my god, our lives are whole. If we ever got to see.
I saw a TikTok of, you know how all the girls are reacting with like heart eyes to every single member during the concert, but the TikTok's being edited so the boys are just BTS members.
I love that. That's literally what I'm thinking about when I see that scene. Like, if I was to see like BTS in person, I would 100% be those like heart eyes. If there was any representation, like animation and representation, it would be like that literal emotion. Speaking of BTS.
Speaking of, perfect segue. What did you do on Saturday, Alice? What did you get up to?
On Saturday, there was the live concert streaming of Permission to Dance, Soul, Day 2 specifically. And we went along to the city. We went to town. And we watched it in a cinema alongside fellow ARMY. It was really fun. I mean, I fully expected to have fun. I think when we walked into the theater, they were playing like it was like an overshot of like the arena in general. I could just like feel the excitement. I'm like, oh my god, there's like actual people. I'm gonna get it. And we're gonna see like BTS like on a big screen, like not in person. Obviously, that would be more ideal, but like in person, like in a big screen, like large. Like this is about as good as I'm gonna get for a while. I just like could feel like the like buzz. I was just like, oh my god, mm-hmm. Like this is so exciting. It was almost like going to like a real concert, as well as like I guess like the thing about like K-pop communities is that it very much is a community that's like very loving and generous and well organized. We know that from
well organized.
Probably a few examples of this, but you know, when we walked into like the front bit of the cinema where they were like. We can get the tickets and stuff. Like people were handing out like cup sleeves, and like we got banners to like wave in the concert. I was like, oh my god, this is so cool! Like it felt like we were going into a safe space. I think.
I remember like we walked past and we're like, oh, they're giving out those cup holders, and we're like really wanted one, but also too shy to ask for one. But like we walked really close and she was like, hey, do you want the cup holders? Like here for concert? We're like, yeah. And she's like, here. And she's like, oh, here are photo cards as well. And we're just like, oh my god.
Yeah, I was like,
these are our people.
I was genuinely moved. Like I love that it's very much like a community of like, again, you know how I was saying, like when you say things like out of context to like people who don't like follow like for example K-pop closely, you can say things and be like, oh my god, like wasn't this person so cute when they said this, and like doesn't make sense because they don't know like the context of it. But if I also say it to you, maybe you'd be like, oh, like you get it, right? I'm kind of like finding that little niche but with like random, so you just like all collectively understand the same references, which is like amazing. And I think it's something that we're kind of new to, because I don't think that, so like I guess in high school, if we talk about our experiences in high school, we like a lot of people in our school would listen to K-pop and stuff, so that was basically our community. But I never like really ventured out to like randoms and stuff like on forums and that. Like I never, that was like never my thing. So like I think our first experience was it was with the BTS exhibition, like the online exhibition, and then and like fair, like we probably shouldn't have done this, but we were just like putting things out there that were kind of like silly, like we thought it was silly, but then actually we really enjoyed that we could like communicate and say things like, hey guys, who is your bias, and then get like a genuine response. And we're like, oh wow, this is actually kind of cool, like they actually do have like a bias. There are other people who exactly like us
up there. I think we're in I think we're like half expecting when we like type out who's your bias for people to take it as a joke or something, because if you're not in the community, obviously, like if you're not familiar, that sounds funny. But when we type out, we're like, lol, just, you know, type in who's your bias, it mine happens. Is Jungkook. And then we get like people going, oh, cool, like, yeah, mine's V. Oh, I like Jimin, and like being very sincere. And we were like, oh, shit.
Yeah, we're like, wow, there's like people who talk like this. Like we talk like this.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like being in that environment, I think, was like nice.
And I think part of concerts as well, like, you know, real life one is obviously being able to see the artist in real life, but also like, you know, the vibe of being with like a huge crowd of people all enjoying the music. So for us, the concerts that we have experienced with BTS have been online, where we each sit either next to each other or in our own homes with FaceTime on. So it's very different to having a crowd of people with you. So that also was such a, I guess, a cool experience as well. Sort of at as close as we could get to mimicking a real concert.
It's been an upgrade for us, basically.
Huge upgrade.
Yeah, so I really enjoyed it. I mean, this... could they do any wrong with the song choices? I think not. So, like, I guess apparently, like, the days they all had, like, really different playlists or sets or whatever you want to call them. I think my favorite thing that I took away from the concert was how much joy there was and how much fun they were having. They felt they looked very free when they were like dancing and just like having fun with it. And I think I could, you could sense their joy from like their dancing, from their expressions and the way they had sung as well. Yeah. I think that was my favorite part of the like concert that I took away from it. Yeah. That it was fun. They were having fun, but also we were having fun too, listening to their music.
I really like that sort of end sequence. So another thing to note for a lot of K-pop concerts is that they go on for a very long time. Like you definitely get bang for your buck compared to some other artists. Not only like do they talk a lot to the audience, but the actual number of songs they do is insane. Like you think it's going to finish and they say, this is the end now. And then they do like six more songs and you're like, okay.
Yeah, that's so true. I think we were maybe halfway through and I was like, I think this is the end. And then the friend that we went to the concert with, she was like, I think there's another hour. And I was like, nah, surely not. But it really did go for another hour. Because they took a break. Yeah, they took a break, as you said, and then they sung some more songs and then they kept going. And then we were like, okay, like, take it.
And then they came back for encore again.
Mm-hmm.
But I really enjoyed that last sort of sequence toward the end where they did like that medley of like older songs like Anpan Man and Go Go, but it was just like without really choreo, just them like dancing around on stage and being funny with each other, pranking each other, just being silly boys on stage. I thought that was like, really fun.
It's like being themselves and just like enjoying the music, having fun on stage. Yeah, like this is, I guess, I haven't done like in-person concerts like this for a long time. Like they've done online concerts, but this is the first time in like 2 years they've done something like as big as this. So it was pretty exciting, I guess, for them as well. Oh, and also it started raining. So I think it looked even more joyous and free because they were just like dancing in the rain, singing in the rain, getting all wet. And like they just like didn't care. They just like kept going. I think that really added to the atmosphere, to be honest. Anyway, loved it.
Loved it.
Loved the songs that we got to see. We saw Black Swan.
Which that was beautiful. Oh.
I mean, they really brought it with that
choreography. Yeah. Amazing. Incredible. Groundbreaking.
Absolutely. Great. And then the fact that they started the concert with On as well.
Again, amazing. Incredible. Groundbreaking.
Yeah. What did you think of our theater and the vibes you were getting from the audience?
So actually when we were outside of the theater just waiting to go in, we were noticing like a lot of people had BT21 merch on them and we're just like, we're trying to guess like who's here for the concert and who's just like a Gen Z.
Gen Z, yeah. We're playing a fun little game.
Yeah.
Us millennials.
Us millennials, yeah. I did try my best to dress up. Oh, we did. We wore purple.
Yeah.
To be poor our hair themed. But yes, our theater, there was like a bit of screaming and yelling and cheering. There was like one girl in particular who was yelling her sweet little voice out for RM. I don't know if you noticed, but she's just like, Namjoon, and like nonstop.
Kept screaming, Kim Namjoon.
Kim Namjoon, Kim Namjoon. But I have seen TikToks where the vibe was just like another level of like constant fan chants and all that. So I think it was a bit more subdued compared to some of the other ones we've seen online.
Yeah, I think so too. And I wonder if that, so the ones that you saw online, the ones I've seen have been of America. I don't know how it was for you, but I think that that might be the shift because I think BTS is much more mainstream in America, maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah, rather than, so like they're popular here for sure. Like it's not, you know, but it's not the same sort of, the community is not as big, I think is probably the way to put it. But we still had a good time. Everyone was singing along to the songs. We were cheering and clapping and a lot of screaming.
You know, I did film a bit of it. It was pretty funny.
It's so funny. But were we screaming along? Yes, we were.
There's a bit of the intro that I filmed, which was purely like the intro video before the concert starts. So they're not on stage. We're not actually seeing them. And then, like, people are screaming every time a new member comes on screen. Yeah. And then the girl in front of me is just going, oh, my God. Oh, my God. Like, you can just hear it.
I love it.
Yeah. Just having a moment, and that's fine. Yeah. We're having a moment.
We're all having a moment. Yeah, because we're all experiencing it at the same time. I mean, we all, like, I guess whenever a concert starts and you get introduced to the person first walks out and stuff, obviously there's going to be a lot of screaming because it's exciting. I think you just get set up in the moment, just like whatever. I did wonder how it sounded from the outside of the theater. Whether they had to, like, barricade the doors or something to, like, make it soundproof. Because I'm sure there were a lot of people walking past being like, who the hell put a bunch of screaming girls into this room?
Also, during Life Goes On, people had, like, their army bombs or their phone flashlight up and they were just, like, swaying. It was very cute.
Yeah. Very much, like, army vibes, community vibes. All drawn by the same love for BTS. It was so fun. I thought that was so fun.
It was such a good experience. Definitely glad that we went because you're very different to just like watching it at home. And I think, you know, prepping us for when we eventually manifesting here, go see BTS live in person.
Look, it'll happen for sure. I'm praying that we can upgrade to an in-person concert, which we were robbed of. Last year.
Robbed of.
Not last year, 2 years ago. Being living in 2021 still.
Yeah.
But it will happen. Yes. Not now.
I might actually die. What if I faint? You have to slap me awake.
Be like, you haven't seen BTS yet. You're not done with this life. I'll be praying on my knees.
At the concert. Like, I just see them I just like faint.
I thought you were like prophesizing your death and then I'm just not yet. In The Sims, so if someone is like dying and the Grim Reaper comes, but you completed the Grim Reaper, you might not be successful. You might or might not be successful. I think it kind of depends on relationship. I'm not sure. Quote me on that. I wonder if it's random also, but it'll be me pleading with the Grim Reaper, like, not now. Please. It's not her time. You don't understand. She hasn't lived yet.
Hasn't seen Jimin in the flesh. Just let her live like a couple more months until the concert.
It might not be now. It might not be this year crying, but I'm sure one day we'll get there. Because I know.
I mean,
you know they'll be around for a long time.
I mean, and life is slowly but surely going back to normal. So we literally just booked tickets to a concert. Eric Nam.
Oh my God, who are we? That was the easiest concert I've ever booked in my whole life. Like, I don't know if this is – I'm wondering if this is also reflective of, like, the concerts that we go to as well, because you don't really go to, like, indie artists. We're so mainstream. Sorry, we only go to popular artists. We don't, like
– Billboard Hot 100 or whatever only.
Like Kendrick, Kanye. Only the most popular artists of their time. Yeah, so I think for this one, because it's a smaller venue and, like, it's not Kanye West, like, you know, very Eric Nam, but you're not Kanye West. But that's fine. You're Eric Nam.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was like the easiest transaction I've ever made in my life. It was like buying groceries or something. Like, it was just like, you want two tickets? You got two tickets. Thank you.
So yes, we're going to see Eric Nam, Stray Kids World Tour. Hopefully they come to their hometown, Sydney.
Hopefully, maybe in like Blacktown or something. Sorry, Seven Hills.
Seven Hills. Oh my God.
Seven Hills RSL.
With the chocolate fountain buffet before.
That would be an absolute treat, you know. Treat yourself to a $24 buffet before watching Stray Kids. I'm here for that life.
I'm definitely here for that.
We'll see. They haven't released Australia yet. The absolute audacity of them to ignore us. But two prominent fans here. I'm sure I can muster up some more.
So yeah, if you know Stray Kids, if you have any goss, let us know. twofriendsinapod@gmail.com.
We'd love to. You know what?
To know.
I don't know what. I just really want to see them. Stream Stray Kids at 1 PM KST on Friday.
Their new album, Ordinary.
Which we've been seeing many trailers for.
And on a side note, we'll tell you exactly what we think of the album next
what
episode.
Flawless transition.
And it felt fitting. You can't ignore them. Mm. But yeah, expect us to, do we say review or do we say just discuss? Because.
Oh, that was I was going to say squeal over.
That made accurate. The most technical term I've heard yet for what we're going to do. We will squeal over Stray Kids Ordinary, which comes out on the 18th of March. Love that for us. Been waiting ever since the trailer dropped. 11. No, sorry, it's not 11 anymore.
But it used to be 11 days ago.
It used to be 11 days. We'll see. But yes, excited for that. I've seen a lot of K-pop this episode.
Very K-pop heavy, so I hope you enjoyed.
Well, I hope you like us talking about K-pop. If you don't, I'm sorry.
Came to the wrong podcast, or the wrong episode at least.
Wrong episode. And then also West Side Story next week. So it's the revamped version of West Side Story, the movie, which is based on a musical. That's on Disney Plus at the moment, which we avoided watching in cinemas, I think. I guess due to timing, but also there was a lot of stuff going
on. Yes.
We can discuss that next week.
Yeah, okay. Have you actually watched the original or the earlier film?
First movie. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't think I have. So maybe I'll watch both.
It's been a while though. So yeah, I would probably want to revisit it as well if I have time. Mm. But I remember enjoying it. I think it was just like a classic Romeo and Juliet story. But make it New York.
New York. Yeah. Alice doesn't have time these days because she's busy.
I don't know doing what, but I'm busy.
She's busy.
What I'm doing, but I don't have time. I don't know where my time went. Maybe I'm just lying around. I'm not sure.
She's busy going to things. She's going to events. She's making TikTok. She's busy.
Asterisks on that making TikTok. It's in the works, guys. It's in the works.
Yeah, nothing. Don't worry. Just
just a few kinks. Patient.
Yeah, we're working things out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Also. We realized that Genki has released a new flavor, green grape and sakura.
Mm.
So Alice, this Friday, you will be getting a can because I have acquired some cans. So next week, there'll be yet another Genki update.
Oh my goodness. This is amazing. I mean, I think we were excited about this flavor because it was just like a green version of the grape flavor that we like. And it's like
a different color flavor.
Like, I also like wonder how different it could taste. Do red grapes and green grapes taste the same? I don't know because I don't really eat grapes.
What? You don't like grapes?
We talked about this before and you had the same reaction.
I must have wiped it from my memory because I was so traumatized and triggered.
You don't eat avocados. So good.
Those two do not compare. Please.
Avocado is universal. Anyway. Yeah, do they taste different?
They do taste different. Yeah, there's a very distinct taste between like green grapes and the bigger, rounder purple grapes.
That like red wine, white wine vibe?
Maybe?
Just vibes.
Just vibes. Different colors is a vibe.
Okay, interesting. Okay, I'm keen. Mm. Oh, does it taste like the like bong bong? Sorry, you haven't tasted it yet.
I haven't tasted it. I haven't tried it yet, but it could.
I think that it tastes like bong bong.
Yeah, we can try it on Friday.
Okay. It's a pre-drink.
Pre-drinks before we get wasted. Wow, pre-drinking sparkling water.
It's going to get wild. God.
We're such disappointments to our parents.
I'm so sorry, mother.
They migrated to Australia for this. Start a podcast.
Also on the Genki update, I did try the plum. I don't hate it as much as you.
What do you think here? What's smoky.
It's very smoky. I think I understand why you don't like it though. Mm. I think it doesn't hit the same as like the plum juice that it's trying to mimic. I think it's because of the lack of sugar, to be honest. And that like it's a very like mild. Yeah, it's a very mild flavor as well. Whereas that plum juice is like really concentrated and really like sweet as well. Mm. Whereas you don't really get that, so you just get like a very weak version of it, and it's like picking up like the notes that aren't as nice, I think.
Mm.
But actually, I don't mind it. Like I still drank it. It's just very smoky. So I'm like, oh, I don't know if I would eat like drink this. So like I wouldn't just like
pick it off
and go drink it. Yeah.
I think probably we had a very like bottle. Yeah, like a very medicinal aftertaste.
Yeah, I can definitely
very strong. Yeah.
Yeah. I can definitely see why you thought that. But I mean, yeah. So Genki ranking still stands. Grape number one.
Number one.
Yeah.
And then I've also acquired a can of the pineapple and sea salt. I haven't tried it yet.
I'm curious how you'll find it. I think you might like it. It's like pineapple. Mm.
I do love pineapple Fanta.
I know.
Yes.
I know.
I do. I loved it. Whenever it's at my local IGA, I'm the one snapping it up. And then the good news is that Korea will be opening up without quarantine in April. So,
So
we're gonna go.
Money.
Yeah.
As I said to you earlier, Gentle Monster is not cheap, so save.
save to live that Jenny lifestyle.
Jenny lifestyle, indeed. And see you at the bus terminal of, I forget what it's called.
Which one? The go-to mall?
The go-to mall. Yeah. The dream that we were trying to live before COVID.
Yeah.
And we can finally do it 2 years later.
Yeah. So we're manifesting good things for us and good things for all our lovely listeners.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You in Korea.
Yes. But thank you for listening so much. Please watch Turning Red.
Oh my God, it's so cute.
It's so cute. You best believe I've been searching Turning Red plush toys. Disney does it again.
Unbelievable.
Why are they so good at it? They're so good at making money.
It's really weird.
It's crazy. It's like so good at it.
I wish I was good at making money. Anyway.
Not blessed.
Yeah. So speak to you next week, I guess, if there's nothing else.
Yeah. Bye.
Bye. Did I tell you my dad grew Carolina Reapers?
Why?
Because...
Why?
Because so he went to Bunnings and they were like, he was buying plants, right? And they're like Carolina Reaper chilies, and then I think on the sign it was like hottest chili of the world. So I think people who know what a Carolina Reaper is, you're like, why would I buy that? But my dad, he saw that sign, he hadn't heard of it before, and was like, oh, it's just like hyperbole. A really hot chili. It's like a hyperbole. Okay. Like, you know how people always claim to be the hottest? They're not actually the hottest. So we saw that and was like, oh, it's probably just a joke or something. So we bought these Carolina Reapers. And then he grew them. And then so my brother came over, and then my mum made like a whole like wok of fried noodles, and she put in a few slices, like not that much, like a few slices of this Carolina with chili.
Yeah.
And like the whole dish was unedible because it was God. So spicy. Yeah, she had to like literally throw it out because like this is actually not like, you can't eat this. Like,
yeah,
it's not humanly possible. Yeah.
Did and they like, at any point try the chili before cooking with it? So they didn't. They just like sliced it in.
Yeah, I think so.
That's wild.
Yeah, and maybe because she was a bit light on the touch. I wasn't there, unfortunately. Yes, maybe thank God. Maybe she was light because it was like a new breed of chili that she hadn't like used before. Like my brother was there, and he ate it. It was just like, that was like, it was not edible. Like it was just so, so hot, even like a few slices.
Yeah.
And like, I would say my family, like they eat chili regularly, but not like super, super like spicy chili, but they definitely have that like taste for it. But like the Carolina Reaper was definitely like a no-go. But the fact that he just bought it from Bunnings.
Bunnings and like grew
just grew it in the backyard, like this insane chili.
So what's happening with the plant now?
I don't know. I think we were just telling him to like sell it, because I'm sure people would want chilies. You could just sell them market Facebook Marketplace or something, but whether he just like just lets it grow and then doesn't eat it, or just like lets it die. I'm not really mm-hmm. sure. I'm not sure what the verdict was, but the verdict is definitely that no more are to be eaten.
So funny.
I just like, yeah, whatever. Like saw the spiciest chili in the world and was just like, can't be true.
Can't be that bad.
Yeah, can't be that bad.
How hot could it be? Why does this seem like something your dad would do? Like, I'm not surprised based on the stories. I'm like, yeah, he would do that.
Kind of in line. Yeah. Just like, whatever. It's not that big of a deal.
And yet it was.
It was very spicy.
Oh my God.
There were definitely consequences to that one. Wow. But yeah. Anyway.
I should throw out all the noodles.
Yeah.
Like, imagine slaving over these noodles and then like just slicing some chilies and you can't even eat it.
Like ruins it. Yeah. Because you can't spicify it as well. Like you can't take it back. There's absolutely nothing that could help balance that out.
Oh God. He should make like a chili sauce with it and sell it.
I reckon you
could. Just make it a business. Yeah.
I reckon you could, but that would also involve like having to cook it and stuff. And I feel like the fumes from that would be like insane.
You'd have to do it outside or something in the shed, in the garage.
Yeah. And then you're all like, your eyes must like be burning from the heat.
You'd wear like goggles and like full on gloves, like Breaking Bad styles.
It'd be insane.
Mm.
But yeah, it's just
funny.
You should
take some to prank people. Like but not me.
It's actually like mean, isn't it? Yeah. I feel like that's actually mean. Like it's not even like it's just like a slightly spicy, like wasabi or something, right? Like that's funny because it's relatively harmless, but I'm like, you would die. You would just like lose all sense of like taste. You'd be burning for hours, I reckon.
Carolina Reaper one chip challenge, the world's hottest corn chip. Which if your dad saw, he'd be like, how hot could it be?
How hot could it be? And they'd be mad that there's only one chip in the whole packet.
Wow. Well,
yeah.
I love the little adventures of your dad.
A lesson learned.
You know, science says it's the hottest chili. Like, just believe it.
Yeah.
Or just do a Google.
Yeah, that's the thing. No Google. Just
Yeah.